Just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. A Thursday edition of Smith and Jones. And Jonesy, I'm still trying to get over last night.
I know.
It was not pretty. It was not pretty by any means.
Did you have a beer or two or 10 when you went home?
Yeah. Not 10. Might have had a couple, though. Might have had a couple with a little side bag of Tostitos. Needed something salty to – man, I needed something after last night. I had much higher expectations, as I'm sure Sergio Scariolo and the Toronto Raptors did. I'm sure each individual Raptor had higher expectations last night. And the way that game started, I was thinking, all right, here we go. Answering the call in the face of adversity, an undermanned and a 13-3 lead a couple minutes, maybe 3 minutes into the ballgame. And then, boom, wheels fall off and wheels never got back on as the Raptors get pasted by the Pistons. But a chance to get back on track tonight on the back-to-back, albeit against a much more difficult opponent in their joint. So it certainly, you would think, on paper, doesn't bode well for the Raptors. But that said, on paper, it is boded even a word? It boded well last night, and that didn't seem to make a lick of difference.
Yeah, Boston's won three in a row, and they are playing better. But, you know, Eric, we talk about those nights, you know, 10-10, 62, and an 82-game schedule where there are 10 nights you're going to win no matter what. I mean, you could close your eyes and throw it over your head from center and it's going to go in. And then there are other 10 nights when you're right under the basket and you get four shots with nobody on the other side of the court and you can't put it in. And then it's your consistency is defined over the 62 games in the middle. And I got to tell you, last night just sure seemed like, you know, not to take anything away from the Pistons, but last night just seemed like one of those nights where and wasn't the lack of effort. You could see, you know, Kyle giving everything. It just, concentration wasn't there. Execution wasn't there. And it was one of those nights where they were destined to lose. And give Detroit credit, they were above their averages and everything. They average 107. Last night they had 129. They usually make 11 or 12 threes a game. Last night they made 20. It just kind of worked out for the Pistons in that way. And not the Raptors' night, so you turn the page and you get ready for tonight. Although, like you said, albeit a much stiffer challenge tonight.
Definitely a stiffer challenge, no doubt about that. With the Boston Celtics, you look at the standings now, Jonesy, in Boston. It was just about a week ago where people were calling for the head of Brad Stevens. Now they're back above 500 and they're the fourth seed in the East. So, again, as we talk about almost on a daily basis, it's just that you constantly and chatter about the fact that, you know, you can go, and I don't even mean this as a, you know, as a tongue in cheek. It's a literal fact. You can go from eighth to fourth, fourth to eighth, ninth to fifth in a matter of one, maybe two nights, not just two games. The Raptors now at 17-18, mathematically tied with the Miami Heat, but the Heat with the tiebreaker bumps Toronto into the eighth seed, only a half a game ahead of the Pacers and Bulls. The Hawks now, since making the coaching change, I believe 4-1 or 3-1 since Lloyd Pierce left, so they're starting to come on strong again. And of course, then you've got the Wizards trying to recover after their slow start to the season, so it's certainly wide open in the Eastern Conference. We'll continue that conversation, Jonesy, in about 5 minutes or so. When Matt Devlin joins us, the television voice of the Toronto Raptors, we'll look back to last night, look ahead to tonight's game, and also just kind of look ahead to the second half of the season. And that will tip off a week today, next Thursday, when the Raptors are next in action after tonight's game. So a full week off, and they certainly need it, considering all of the health and safety protocols they're dealing with right now with five players and six members of the coaching staff, including head coach Nick Nurse. The Blue Jays losing last night, their first loss in the spring season, but you and I keeping a bit of an eye on the hockey game last night as well. We had it on one of the side monitors, one of the smaller monitors, while we were calling the game, and the Leafs continue to run roughshod, Jonesy, a 6-1 victory. And I want to ask you this, I kind of hand it over to you more so as the rabid Leaf fan between the two of us. It's getting to a point now, and you see it certainly on social media, and it's been discussed even on these airwaves a little bit. How do you think you judge or can judge? And I don't necessarily mean you. Coaches, management. This kind of plays into a conversation we had about the Raptors. How do you judge what the Leafs are or aren't when they've been beating up on the same six teams and at least a couple of those six aren't very good, and then you're trying to figure out as you get towards the trade deadline whether you need to beef up, whether you can stay status quo, because you're really not going to have a true understanding of what you have or don't have until you start seeing opponents that you don't know, that you haven't played, come playoff time.
Yeah, no, it's akin to when we were really kind of watching college basketball very closely. Oh, you know, they're an ACC school. You know, oh, they're a Big East school. Oh, they're an SEC school. And yeah, you're like back in the day, you're the Big East and you spend your time trying to beat Syracuse and St. John's and Georgetown and Providence and you beat each other up in the conference, and then you get into the tournament and here comes the big, bad, mighty Big East, and they get beat by like Coppin State, you know, like they and it's tough to judge that value, E, because you're playing against the same teams. And I mean, I think it would be prudent for the Leafs to be, you know, as I'm sure they're doing, scouting, you know, all the other teams, you know, like I said, the Dallas Stars and the Boston Bruins and watching them and getting ready to play them. But it's hard to compare. I mean, we went through the same thing. I know when I was playing Canadian basketball and people said, oh, you know, the OUA is a weak conference. Well, yeah. Oh, the AUAA, Acadia and St. Mary's and X, and it's such a tough conference. But yeah, then we go down there and we beat them easily. So like it is very difficult to compare, E, and I think you have to step back, look at your team objectively, and continue to be aware of what your strengths are, but really zero in and highlight your weaknesses and say, this could be a problem when I look at another team. Like, you know what? We may need another centerman. I'm just throwing that out there because if we ever have to play X team, man, their depth in the middle is I think it's better than ours. So we need to go and find that. Or those are things that I think you have to be really good at in terms of self-evaluation, or else you're right. You're going to set yourself up for, well, geez, we didn't know they were that good. Well, you should have been looking at what you needed and making yourself better.
Just as an aside, away from the Toronto Maple Leafs and away from the hockey chatter, Jonesy, some breaking news, and it's not really, with due respect, earth-shattering news. And it's something that has been rumbled for at least a week or so now, but it is official as of today that the Pittsburgh Steelers have inked Ben Roethlisberger to a deal, so he will be back as their starting quarterback next year. As we kind of bounce around here the first few minutes of the show, talking a little basketball, a little baseball, a little hockey, a little football. Speaking of baseball, later in the show, Shai Davidi is going to join us. That plays into, Jonesy, the signing of Roethlisberger, a conversation that we had earlier in the week. Yeah, go ahead.
Was it the Ben Roethlisberger that threw the interceptions in the playoffs against the Browns and let the ball get snapped over his head? Was it that guy? Because I'm okay if they sign that guy.
Hey,
I'm not okay if
he's got to be closer to that guy, doesn't he? Doesn't he have to be closer to that guy now at this point in his career? I mean, it's pretty clear, I think at least, watching last year, especially in the second half of the season, he's lost a little bit of juice. You know, when Pittsburgh's schedule turned and they actually started playing quality opponents, they didn't look so mighty anymore after that hot start to the season. And, you know, I think it's probably part of the reason why a lot of people felt going into the offseason that, is this now the time to move on and to find somebody else? Because at some point, and I'm not here to stomp on or dance on the guy's grave. He's been incredible as a football player for a hell of a long time for the Steelers. But at some point, you know, you're not only on the back nine, you're on 17 looking to get to 18 and go have a beer. Right? I think you're getting to that point with the Steelers and Roethlisberger, but it's got to be hard for organizations like that of knowing exactly when to make that move, when to make that decision to usher in potentially a new era. And you would think maybe for Pittsburgh, and obviously it shows what I know, because they now have committed to Ben for at least one more year, I would have thought this would be the time. You haven't really established yet, a great run game sort of in the wake of, you know, those fantastic years that you had with Le'Veon Bell. You've got solid young receivers right now, especially led by the Canadian Claypool, but you've got some young pieces. Maybe now time for a young or younger quarterback to sort of grow and build with this and still stay competitive at the same time. But obviously, again, shows what I know, the fact that they're staying committed to Ben for at least one more year.
I would say this, it pains me still that Ben Roethlisberger is like the winningest quarterback in the history of the stadium at Cleveland since they've come back. But it's sensitive. I mean, look at the whole Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers thing, right? This guy's Aaron. We know what we have with Aaron Rodgers, and Brett's been great, but he's getting close to, like you said, 16, 17. His time's almost done, and we got this guy waiting to come. And it wasn't real pretty when Favre left Green Bay, but how do you argue with what Rodgers was doing and has done? And isn't it ironic that he kind of finds himself in the same spot, like last year being upset when they drafted a quarterback? And if you're Pittsburgh, it's too bad you didn't have a guy like, draft a guy like a Jalen Hurts or have a guy waiting. We asked the other day about Mac Jones. Like, if they can get him, Pittsburgh, and he's a second or third round quarterback, as Mark was saying, our NFL guy, then if you're Pittsburgh, why don't you grab Mac Jones? Because maybe he's the guy that learns under Ben Roethlisberger and steps in with some of, as you said, the young receivers. But it's touchy. I agree with you. It's touchy. What do you do with a guy that's done so much for you like that, and he's your star, and it's time to usher him out, but you don't want to push him out the door? It reminds me of the game of zones thing with Dirk Nowitzki last year that they put on the cartoon. If you haven't watched it, it's hilarious, and he says, I want to play another 10 years. And Mark Cuban goes, what, another 10 years? He goes, no, maybe I'll go this year. They were kind of ready to move on from him, right?
Yeah. No, you're bang on, and it's a good analogy, and Jonesy, a good assessment of things as well. And I was trying to find the segue to bring it back to basketball because we're about to bring our next guest into the fray. And I thought, maybe it's similar to the situation with the Raptors and Kyle Lowry and a veteran ushering on. Difference being, Kyle Lowry is still playing at a very high elite level, and there would be a noticeable change, and you would assume potentially noticeable drop off if you didn't have a guy like Kyle Lowry on your team. With the way that he still continues to produce. And again, not trying to dance on Ben Roethlisberger's grave and say that he's terrible. He's not. He's just not what he once was. Whereas I think Kyle is still better than what he once was, which makes the decision for the Toronto Raptors so much more difficult as they approach the deadline, the offseason, et cetera. And then you combine the record and hovering around 500 all year and everything else. So major decisions looming for the Raptors in the next few weeks as they approach the deadline and as we begin to start the second half of the season next Thursday. But one more before we get to the second half, and that goes tonight against the Boston Celtics on the back-to-back for Toronto. And joining us on the line to talk about, tonight's game and much more, television voice of the Toronto Raptors, our colleague, our friend Matt Devlin. Matty, thanks for the time.
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, Matt. Doing well. Matt, listen, I said to Jonesy last night on the air, I said it to kick off the show today. I needed a beer last night, man, after the game last night. That was a rough one, and I didn't see it coming. I give credit to the Pistons for winning and didn't assume going in that Detroit couldn't win, but I didn't see it unfolding the way it did and just the dissection that the Pistons laid on the Raptors from basically mid-first quarter on.
Well, I think it's extremely difficult. Both of you know this. When you look at Detroit, they come in hungry. They come in, with a lot of first-round picks and some lottery picks, and they're even missing players. But I go back to what Dwayne Casey said before the start of the game. Hey, you might be able to beat up on us now, but just wait 2 or 3 years. And you could tell that in a hurry, Ed Stefanski and those in charge in Detroit, along with Dwayne Casey, are laying that foundation. And then, with the Raptors – depth all year long has been certainly something that you look at with the Raptors. And last night, it was front and center. It was front and center. I mean, we, all three of us, know how talented the top 5, 6 players are, 7 players. We know how talented the coaching staff is. And we know that they have tried a lot of different combinations and gone in a lot of different down a lot of different roads to get to 17-17 before last night. And sometimes you just don't have enough. And, you know, I thought it was interesting. Kyle said after the game, right? He's like, you know what, maybe I was, you know, sharing it too much. And last night was a night where Kyle and Norm needed probably to score 30 plus in order to walk away with a W. And as much as we talk about offense, to me, and I'd love to hear what you guys have to say, I think that defensively was really where having those new players, those opportunities that you need, just, you know, with the way the Raptors typically play defense, you know, unfortunately, they were just not able to have that communication defensively.
Matt, I totally agree. And we know that, you know, the offense is finely tuned. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it doesn't go. But as long as the other guys having trouble at the other end, you know, you're going to be in the game. And Eric and I were, I don't know about, you know, about you guys, but Eric and I were all over that last night. We kept looking at the Pistons going, come on, they're not going to shoot 53% the whole game, are they? And it got later and later into the game. And I think your point is well taken about the defensive chemistry. I won't say there wasn't defensive effort. It may not have been the smartest effort all the time. It might not have been the timeliest effort, but it was there. But the problem was they were leaving guys open, not rotating, kind of ball watching, doing all those things. And, you know, what do the coaches always say? Keep a guy to his average or below and you'll beat him. The Pistons were above every one of their averages. And Matt, isn't that where we talk about the chemistry and everybody thinks about offensive chemistry? Yeah. But, man, defensive chemistry is just as important, isn't it, Matty?
Well, maybe even more important, right, in that, especially with this team, because when you look at what they do on the fast break, points off of turnovers, you know, all those categories that they've excelled in now for, you know, a handful of years, that you were hoping that would be the case last night, and it just wasn't. I mean, there was perimeter blow-bys, you know, getting to the rim, obviously not putting bodies, you know, on Pistons, you know, on the offensive glass and the putbacks. And so there was multiple things. And you know, it's unfortunate because there were a couple of players that, you know, you look at and you say, okay, you know, it'd be nice to get a little bit more out of them. And here's this opportunity. And it just unfortunately just didn't unfold like that, like we've seen it and we've become so used to, right? But we've all talked about this, that it's, you know, a year that, you know, they were looking at, you know, the off season and the free agency and going down that road. And so, you know, you're looking for a few different things, you know, on the roster contractually and backfilling it. And so it's just unfortunate that, you know, look, it's, you know, from a COVID standpoint, it wasn't if it was going to happen, it was when. And fortunately for the Raptors, you know, it's, you know, came at this time. You hope that everybody's okay. I say it's fortunate because obviously you have this All-Star break coming up.
Speaking with Matt Devlin, television voice of the Toronto Raptors, just to let folks know as well, in case they hadn't heard, the Raptors will be without Jalen Harris as they get set for the Celtics, as he was reassigned back to Raptors 905 to help with the playoff run with the 905. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, based on everything I read, that was a move that had to have been made either late last night or first thing this morning, because players had a certain time frame essentially to be eligible based on quarantining rules and whatnot to be going back into the bubble in time for that first postseason game. Sort of a one-and-done playoff elimination type format for the G League postseason. So again, just to clean that up for folks, they will play, the Raptors will, without the services of Jalen Harris, who didn't get back into the ballgame last night anyway, but just thought I'd pass that along. Matty, as it relates to tonight, maybe tying in that conversation a little bit, do you think that Sergio and obviously in consultation with Nick and the staff today, do you think they stick with the same starting five? Do you mix it up a little bit? You know, you went with Watanabe in the lineup last night. You tried to keep a pretty solid bench core together, and unfortunately you didn't get really anybody outside of maybe Boucher stepping up. And do you kind of, you know, split the atom a little bit tonight, or do you kind of roll with what you had last night?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we'll probably wait and see. Maybe the matchup tonight with Tice and Boston, maybe that's something that you stick with what you had last night. Maybe they decide to, you know, start Boucher. I understand why they decided not to last night. It's just tough. It's a tough situation that the Raptors are in. You know, when you don't have the starters that they don't have, when you already are in a situation where you have, you know, in major games that they play this year and beating Milwaukee and doing what, you know, they were able to do against Brooklyn, they played a playoff type rotation, right? And that's, you know, ultimately says a lot. And so going into tonight, you know, very much, I think, like what we saw last night, right? You're going to mix in a lot of zone. You're going to mix in combinations of different zones and hope that the Boston Celtics don't, you know, make 20 threes. And that was, you know, the most threes they had made, like, in a first quarter in 23 seasons. It was a season high in made threes. And, you know, you think you go into last night and you know Wayne Ellington, what he can do. But, you know, he just got hot, as we know. So going into tonight, to me, a lot of it is it's the second night of a back-to-back. Raptors have struggled in that. Understand why. You're even more limited now. And it's one of those where, you know, go out and see exactly what you can do. Can you shock them a little bit? They've been playing really well. They were off last night. And then it's, you know, make sure that you get into the All-Star break with everybody healthy and try to get everybody back and really hit the reset button. For, you know, March 11th, I think, right, next Thursday, when they begin the second half.
Matty, I think the break is kind of coming at the right time for them. I mean, we know how compressed the schedule is, and you talk about, you know, trying to get in there as healthy as possible. But if this wasn't the break and these guys had to sit in you know, health and safety protocols and, you know, follow quarantines, you can dip really quickly in the standings. I think about it. I mean, another 5-6 days from now, you could be missing another 2 or 3 games. And now, yeah, if you don't pull it together, you're on a protracted losing streak. So I mean, can the break be coming at a better time for the Toronto Raptors?
No, it can't. And that's what, you know, they're fortunate in that. And again, you hope everybody is, you know, safe and doing well. And then, you know, you take on this Boston team. Look at every team's gone through this, right? There's only 3 teams, I think, left now that haven't had a postponed game. And that's the Clippers, Lakers, and Brooklyn, if I'm not mistaken. And the Raptors were, you know, that fourth team, you know, up until this past Sunday. So the NBA, given everything that's going on, they've done a great job, you know, getting in the games. And, you know, it's unfortunate that you go through this. Miami has gone through it. Now look at Miami. They're starting to climb again. And make you look at up and down the East, everybody's kind of had to deal with this outside of Brooklyn. But they have their own, you know, the trades and trying to bring in James Harden. He's been playing great. And KD being out. And but everybody's kind of going through their own little thing. And so it's going to be really interesting second half. There is absolutely no doubt. And I think, Eric, as you mentioned, the trade deadline coming up, that is going to provide a lot of interest because that is right around the corner. And, you know, the Raptors, it's unfortunate because they were just, you know, they were playing so well. And now you kind of get into this and then you go, okay, you know, let's see what we can do here in the second half.
Speaking with Matt Devlin. Matt, you talk about the, you know, the protocols and all the issues and whatnot the Raptors are dealing with right now. I think you bring up an interesting point. And Jonesy, we may, and again, I hate to wrap you in with me. Maybe you've said it, and I'm not remembering. So I'll say I instead of we. I've been guilty of, even going back to the other sports too, back to the bubble, back to baseball, National Football League, and hockey and basketball going on right now. I know I've been guilty of talking about the virus and talking about certain players becoming exposed and positive cases and the impact on games, the impact on teams and whatnot. But I maybe haven't shined enough of a spotlight on how are these guys actually doing. You know, we just assume that because we knock on wood, and I'm literally knocking on wood right now, we haven't heard about somebody being gravely, gravely ill or, God forbid, passing away. We've basically said, oh, they got COVID, okay, and they're going to be back in 7 to 10 days or 14 days, whatever it is, and we move on. Then a situation arises with the Raptors where maybe it hits a little bit closer to home. We know these guys a little bit more. And then part of the reason I bring this up as well, Matty, is and again, I kind of using the same line I used earlier in the show about Ben Roethlisberger. I'm not here to try and stomp on a guy, but I've met Shams Charania a couple of times. I'm not going to say I'm, bosom buddies with the guy by any means. But from a journalistic standpoint, and I ask both of you this question because, Jonesy, we haven't discussed it yet either, and we've all been around for a long time in the media. I was a little bit perplexed by what I saw yesterday. I know it kind of became fodder on social media too. When Shams tweeted out the fact that the Raptors, in relation to their positive cases, had sources telling him that the internal spread may have arisen from inconsistent mask wearing from coaching staff members. And I thought, I have not seen Woj or Shams or anybody call out, and I'm not saying there's a Raptor conspiracy, I'm just wondering why this time there was a source or a calling out of what the Raptors are or aren't allegedly doing when 27 teams of the 30 in the league have had a positive case stemming from something or someone or somewhere, and why were the Raptors and the Raptors coaching staff singled out? I thought that was really bizarre, Matty.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I think that we all, and the Raptors that faced Minnesota twice, I think obviously of Karl Anthony Towns and what he has had to go through this season. It's just heartbreaking. Losing his mother and with seven family members, and he had it as well, I believe. And just going through that, it's and anybody that has had to go through this. And I found that interesting as well. I think as we, look at, what's happening now in the U.S., they're vaccinating, I think, 2 million now a day. I think that, as we head toward the summertime, you're certainly going to see more fans allowed into arenas. I think that in baseball, being open air, I think that you'll certainly see that. And this is kind of, talking about the effects of, you're asking about the effects of the virus. And I think that, as we already know, the leagues, I think, will step forward, all of the professional leagues, and buy enough vaccines for players and staff that want it. Dwayne Casey said he had already had the vaccination. So that will happen, whether or not that gets administrated prior to, playoffs happening, because I think, it changes obviously every day, but I think, the U.S. is on pace now for May, right, getting to where they want to go. So, does that happen then after that for those that decide to get vaccinated? So it's going to be interesting to continue to watch, that. But it's going to be different for us here being in, Toronto. We're currently in a lockdown, and understanding that all three of us know this from talking to friends, in Florida, it's wide open. It's wide open, and there's no mask mandate. Right. There's no mask mandate in a lot of states. And then that is left up to each individual municipality. So, so how it spread and how it didn't spread and all that, I don't know. And at the end of the day, to me, that's extremely private. You know that the NBA is doing everything they can, to do the best that they can to keep everybody safe.
Matty, Jonesy, do you have another one there? Are we good to go? You make the call, Jonesy.
No, let's take the break. It's something that I was gonna pick up on, but we got time. We'll have Matty back on, and what I wanted to pick up on maybe better later on down the road. So we're good.
Well, we call that a tease. Then we just don't know when the road when it is. Is that tomorrow? Is that Monday? We don't know.
We're talking a month or two. Jonesy, we'll talk about it tonight.
We'll talk in about three hours. Yeah,
that's right. Socially distanced. So, all right, buddy.
All right, guys. All Matty, thanks for this.
All right.
Yep, there's Matt Devlin, television voice of the Toronto Raptors again. Raptors and Celtics going at it tonight on the back-to-back. The Raptors will try to get back on the winning track, get back to 500 as they head into the All-Star break. It's another day where we've got a lot of action involving all of the Toronto sports teams, with the Blue Jays in action as we speak down at spring training, with an early lead, one zip over the Tigers in the second inning. And later on tonight, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Vancouver Canucks going toe-to-toe. But we will talk Jays with Shai Davidi from Sportsnet next on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. All right, you're going to release this info, Jonesy, or are you teasing it for another day? You said that, you know, another day, another time with Maddie at the end of our conversation. Is it now or is it later?
I was just talking about, you know, when you brought up the whole thing with Shai Davidi with Sham Sharania. And talking about, you know, why the Raptors are singled out. Like, that's, I mean, he's just reporting something that somebody's told him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I get that, but he hasn't done that before.
And that's, and that's just it, though. You never know, but who's the source and where's it coming from? And don't tell me the Raptors, as you said, don't tell me the Raptors are the only team that has had this, because they're actually the third or fourth to last team that actually been impacted this way. So, I just think it's one of those things where you just kind of give it a whatever. I mean, the report is probably accurate. He's a good reporter, but isn't it one of those things that you just kind of have to, you know, turn the other cheek and say, okay, well, we're not the only one. This isn't unique to us. And if you're trying to single us out on this, then I'm not buying that.
I mean, to me, an example that stands out maybe more than any is what the hell's happened with Kevin Durant? He had COVID, came back, and then did he get it a second time? And then he's exposed potentially to somebody else. Was he started a game because he thought he was okay, but then he's pulled mid-game, and then he's held out for almost a week? I don't remember hearing in anybody's sources about what he did, what he didn't do, and I don't know. Again, I'm not saying it's a Raptor conspiracy by any stretch of the imagination. I just thought it was interesting, if not questionable, the way the story ultimately came out, considering, again, 27 of the 30 teams in the league have had an issue with COVID at some point thus far this season.
Right.
So I don't know.
Different, right?
Exactly. You know what? This might be, and I know I apologize to him ahead of time. He didn't think he was come on the air to talk about this, and we will 1,000% talk Blue Jays for a good 10, 15 minutes. But as we bring into the conversation from Sportsnet, Shai Davidi. Shai, thanks for the time, first of all. But I ask you, as a guy who's been around a long time, worked for different outlets as well. You're a college, you know, professor, teacher now as well. So when we talk about the morals and the ethics and whatnot, this is maybe more on your path than Jonesy and I. We're just a couple of talking heads on the radio and TV. You're an actual journalist. How do you deal with, you know, sources and what you're willing to put out, not willing to put out, name a source, not name a source? How do you have that, or what is the criteria when you're, writing an article or a column or going on television and deciding what you deem valuable, necessary, of interest, et cetera?
Wow, Julie, how long we got?
Shai,
about this. Yes, Paul?
Shai, let me say this. You have one of your students who happens to be in your class that's listening right now, because she just texted me and said, hey, Dad, you have Shai on. I'm listening. So it's kind of like you're in class now. You not only have the two knuckleheads, Smith and Jones, you have another very educated Jones that's listening too, okay?
All right. Yeah, I'll keep that in mind. But look, I think there's a few things there. I think just from a basic standard, I think if you're going to put something out there, you have to have a anonymously, just on source. There needs to be a good reason for that. I think the bar needs to be, if somebody wants to slag somebody else, you should not allow that to be done anonymously. You know, I think that if somebody wants to put something negative out about somebody else, then that needs to be, they need to put their name out there. Otherwise, you know, you're really at risk of being used. But you know, a lot of the source work that we do in this business tends to revolve around, you know, contracts and trades and things of that nature. And for me, I just think that, you know, you need to be sure that the information that you're getting is legitimate, is from
far enough up the food chain that it's going to be accurate and that you're not guessing. Because ultimately, look, your brand, who you are as a journalist, depends on whether you're accurate and you're correct. And, you know, if you want people to trust you and to trust your outlet, you need to have pretty strong standards out there. So, you know, I do think it's really important that, you know, if we're going to get into the realm of, you know, some of the he said, she said stuff that can come out in our industry, that we've got a pretty good vetting process for that, and that we're certain that this is not just necessarily someone's agenda, but there's some real information, some public value to what you're granting someone anonymity for.
So before we leave the shine, I promise I want to talk about something that Dan Plesac said yesterday, but before we leave this, when that negative does come out, and as you know, it kind of runs in contrast, contrary to what you said about if it's negative, you should put somebody's name on it. But they give you that, it's negative, it gets out, there's no name put on it. Are you not the one kind of on the front lines taking the bullets for that when it comes back?
Yeah, I mean, you should be. Like, you know, when I say kind of negative, somebody says, like, you know, X is a really bad person, right? If somebody wants to say that about somebody else, they need to put their name to it, right? Otherwise, you're really getting used by it, because then you're giving somebody a microphone or a platform to essentially slag someone without facing the repercussions. So, you know, to me, I think that you have to do the work at that point to make sure, okay, well, is this person really a bad person? What are everybody saying? You know, give that person a chance to respond. But, you know, it's just, you're absolutely putting yourself out there, because otherwise you're doing somebody else's dirty work and allowing that person to hide behind the veil of anonymity. And I think that's a really dangerous realm to get into. And that's a standard that we need to hold firm on.
Speaking with Shai Davidi from Sportsnet, Jonesy, I'm going to let you take this one as well, just because I know you just mentioned you wanted to bring up something in relation to our conversation with former major leaguer Dan Plesac yesterday.
Yeah, he was talking about, you know, some of the acquisitions, and you know, he was talking about pitcher Eric Matz that they got from New York, and I guess Dan, being a former pitcher, probably sees something in the kid, and he talked about, you know, getting away from the hometown pressures and all of that. Shai, are you kind of how much are you looking forward to that? And are you a believer that, you know, sometimes, you know, how much of a believer are you that sometimes a change of scenery just does a guy good?
Well, it's funny, right? Because change of scenery, when somebody's coming off an off season or a bad season, everyone's always like, oh, a change of scenery is going to be great, right? But, like, you know, if somebody's performing well, is a change of scenery, you know, is it necessarily negative? Really, it's what somebody makes of it, I think. And, you know, in this case, my sense is that Steven Matz is enjoying hearing some different perspectives and some different thoughts about how his repertoire could potentially be leveraged. And as you know, with coaches talking to players, a lot of times coaches say similar things, but have different ways of getting the information across. And, you know, sometimes depending on the person you are, you know, you can hear the same thing, but when somebody presents it to you, the way somebody presents it to you can make a major difference. So that's where I think the change of scenery stuff can sometimes be beneficial. You know, you hear a little, the inputs that you're getting have changed and evolved a little bit, and maybe they just click with the way your mind may work in a way that the message beforehand wasn't. But, you know, Matz has a good arm, man. Like, this is a guy who's going to average 94, 95 miles an hour for fastball. You know, he chased velo a little bit, or he was saying last year, and he felt that caused his sinker to not sink as effectively. That's a big pitch for him. You know, the first time out, he got, I think, was 2 or 3 ground balls in his 2 innings of work. You know, that's a good sign for him. So, you know, there's, it's an intriguing arm. and there's a lot of talent there. If it comes together, he can be a pretty good piece for them. But there's a lot of volatility there, and I think that's why, you know, the Blue Jays were able to get him for what they got him for.
Speaking with Shai Davidi from Sportsnet, Shai, staying on that topic about pitching, it continues to be, I think at least, the biggest question or the biggest theme about the spring is, what does the rotation look like? How good is the rotation? Does it need to be addressed now? Do you address it a month, 6 weeks into the season once you've had a chance to look at it a little bit more? But we also saw last night a little bit of a look perhaps into the future with Woods Richardson and Manoah as well. What do you think about just in terms of their short, let alone long-term impact and the decisions thus that management needs to make in trying to adjust this rotation accordingly for the present and the future?
Yeah, I mean, those guys are super interesting, and they are probably, you know, considering the fact that they haven't pitched above A ball because both of them, there was no minor leagues for them last year. It's sort of difficult to gauge what that timeline is for them, but you know, they're clearly on the horizon, and no one's going to make a big deal out of a spring game on March 3rd. But you know, they face the real Yankees lineup. That's a lineup you're going to see in the regular season, and neither of them shrunk from it. And they have the stuff. For both guys, it's a pretty overwhelming package. You know, they've got the ability to dominate hitters and to really pick them apart. And they show that a little bit. So, you know, I think part of the calculations the Blue Jays had this offseason when they were looking at guys, they did talk to a few pitchers about multi-year deals, but mostly they signed one-year guys. They've been careful because they don't want to block the progress of, you know, those two and some of the other young pitchers. They want to make sure that there's the space for them on the big league roster to emerge and contribute in the years to come. The starting pitching conversation is going to be one we're going to be having all year. The nature of the season is that the Blue Jays are going to have to delve deep into the rotation. We're probably going to see lots of starters with double-digit starts just because they're trying to keep everyone healthy over 162 as you jump from, you know, last year's shortened season. Those young pitchers are going to get an opportunity, and maybe an opportunity sooner than we might think.
Shai, last year this time, at least for me anyway, the name Nate Pearson was there was some kind of for me intrigue to it, and you know, wanting to see what the young man can do. I'm looking for the right word. The intrigue hasn't died down because there's potential and there's promise there. But have things kind of leveled out in terms of expectations for him and people maybe not, pushing him towards the spotlight the way it has been in the past?
I mean, I think I know what you're trying to get at there. I'm not certain that the expectations have been diminished by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, we've seen it now, so it kind of feels a little bit more within our grasp, and maybe that's why it's just sort of changed the impression a little bit. But you know, the fact that he's going to miss a little bit of time, the Blue Jays were thinking that it's not going to be very long with what they're calling a grade one groin sprain, seem to think that it's very, very minor. It's certainly not ideal, but you look at his last outing, you know, and his fastball is averaging 97 miles an hour, right? And he's just a tick under 100 miles an hour. I mean, that's just, you know, goofy stuff, right? Like, it's video game stuff. And you try to imagine that in the Blue Jays rotation every 5 days, it's pretty tantalizing. At the same time, you know, we have to remember that because of injuries and other circumstances in recent years, like, he's still relatively immature as a pitcher. You know, he needs the opportunity to just learn and to grow. And, you know, I think maybe part of what you're alluding to there is that, you know, we're having to sort of understand that, yeah, there are going to be some growing pains here. We're going to have to have some patience and give him some leeway as he has the bumps. But I mean, you just look at the package, and when that comes together, I mean, he could just be an absolute dominant force.
Speaking of the Blue Jays in action right now, spring training down in Florida, leading the Tigers 2-0, top of the third. So Toronto again with a 2-0 lead early in that ball game. Shai, we appreciate the time as always. Hope you're healing up well as well, and we'll speak soon and be talking to you no doubt throughout the season. All the best.
Yeah, appreciate Thanks, it, Shai. Gentlemen. Good to chat with you guys as always.
There is Shai Davidi from Sportsnet, and handled that curveball off the bat like a pro as well, and something perhaps we can continue to chat about Jonesy when we come back on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Love it. A little more Billy for us.
A couple minutes left,
and I want to go back to the conversation we started with Shai Davidi, non-baseball wise, just, you know, again, morals, ethics, sources, reporting, whatnot. It is an interesting and sort of unique fine line that you walk in terms of what you can and can't reveal. And I find perhaps, and maybe I'm wrong in this assessment, it's a little bit easier for us to do it in the broadcast world because you can even just get away with paraphrasing your own words and using the information provided to you to help formulate an educated and informed opinion without even having to necessarily say, sources told me. Those sources maybe are just helping you formulate what you're saying as opposed to having to necessarily put it in black and white. And again, that there are unique situations and different ways to come at it from every angle, but that's just sort of one aspect of it that sort of hit me in talking to Shai.
Yeah, and you know, it's different for a guy like Shai because he's putting it down on paper. It's the written word, and there's no disputing. He can't go back. Well, that's not what I said. Well, no. This is what you wrote. It's on paper, so it's in print. So it makes it a little bit difficult. And Eric, and there's another layer to that. I mean, you and I traveling with the team. You know, I always say we're the basement apartment renters. We see stuff we're not supposed to see sometimes, and you just kind of look at each other and say, I didn't see that. Did you? No, I didn't. And we leave it and away it goes.
You know, this is an interesting topic. Perhaps we have to dig into a little bit more tomorrow when we have more time as well, because I hear you on that. And it can be revealing in both pro and con the way that journalists handle certain situations, the way that the audience, the readers, the listeners react to certain information that's out there as well. So, you know, let's discuss that in further detail tomorrow as well. I find it fascinating to just talk about stuff like that sometimes. Thanks to Matt Devlin for joining us today. Again, the Raptors in action tonight on the back-to-back against the Boston Celtics. And also thanks to Shai Davidi, Blue Jays in action as we speak, leading the Tigers down in Florida. Also later on tonight, the Toronto Maple Leafs going toe-to-toe against the Vancouver Canucks. Writer's Block comes next. It's been Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.